Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to the A to Z of David Bowie. I'm Mark Riley, and that colourful character is Rob Hughes.
As you'll be aware, the A to Z of David Bowie is free to download.
Lunacy.
But if you'd like to support us along the way and be a member of an exclusive Bowie club, you can, and here's how.
There's an exclusive Bowie members club called Cheap Things, and for just $5 a month, wow, you can be part of it.
Why, so now you're thinking $5 isn't much, but what exactly will I get for my hard-earned cash?
Well, in short, you'll get lots of great new exclusive material delivered to your door.
Well, computer, actually, Mark.
Via a system called Patreon.
That's right, Mark. Patreon is a payment system that allows you to contribute your monthly subscription and offers you a portal to access the exclusive material.
Material such as...
interviews with Bowie's cohorts and friends.
There'll be regular film Bowie quizzes.
Bowie guitar tutorials.
Unreleased archive written material.
Competitions.
And perhaps most impressively, short films featuring the Cheap Things team.
Ah, that'll be me, Mark, Howard Knock and Jason Reed.
Visiting various Bowie places of interest.
And much more besides.
All this for just $5 a month.
So if you can't resist, simply go to patreon.com, that's patreon.com/cheapthings, or one word, and join up.
There's also a website,
bowie@cheapthings.com.
Book early.
T is for Tonight.
Tonight is a 16th studio album by English musician David Bowie, released on the 29th of September 1984 by EMI America Records. It followed his most commercially successful album, Let's Dance. He described the album, released immediately after his previous album's tour wrapped up, as an effort to keep my hand in, so to speak, and to retain the new audience that he had recently acquired. So that's already, is pretty kind of calculated.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as we'll discover, he'd sort of lost his way a bit here.
Yeah.
You know, he had his eye on the commercial prize. The artistic level of Bowie went... anyway, we should find out, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
The album was a commercial success, got to number one in the UK in October 84 and received a platinum disc in America and a gold one in the UK. It's received mostly poor reviews from music critics, and Bowie expressed dissatisfaction with it in later years. The album was remastered in 2018 and included in the Bowie box set Loving the Alien.
David Bowie worked on Tonight after completing his Serious Moonlight tour in support of his previous album, Let's Dance. He didn't have much luck writing on tour, so described the process of recording the album Tonight this way.
It was rushed, he said. The process wasn't rushed. We actually took our time recording the thing. Let's Dance was done in 3 weeks. Tonight took 5 weeks or something, which for me is a really long time. I like to work fast in the studio. There wasn't much of my writing on it because I can't write on tour and I hadn't assembled anything to put out. But I thought it a kind of violent effort as a kind of pin-ups.
That's a strange way of approaching it,
yeah,
isn't it? Okay. Bowie purposely sought to keep the sound of the band that he'd used on the previous album and tour. Well, he would do because he was just massive, wasn't
yes.
it? But crucially, I mean, you need all the same component parts to turn around the same kind of product, don't you?
Of course.
And
you
he didn't do that. So feeling that the new fans he'd accumulated would expect to hear the same thing on the new album that they'd heard before, hence the inclusion of the Borneo horned players on the album. So again, he's doing it for the wrong reasons, isn't he? He's putting the cart before the horse. He's thinking, what do the audience want? And Bowie had never done that to that point, as I can remember.
No, he hadn't. He hadn't pandered to the sort of commercial zone. You have to remember, he was like a really sort of, well, not middle of the road, but he was right in the middle, you know, a populist star for the first time in his career. I know he'd had big selling records, but Let's Dance just put him there.
Yeah.
And rather than kind of step into the side, which he did do, of course, in later years,
yeah,
he thought, I'm going to stay here and just see what it's like. And then he started making bad decisions.
Yeah, and I don't even mean particularly just commercially. I mean, you know, if his fans really loved Low, he didn't make Low too. when they might have been expecting.
Yeah.
So, and it was that thing of the comfort zone where you think you know where Bowie's going next, and of course you never did. And
no.
More often than not, 99% of the time, it was just brilliant. But on this occasion, he's thinking, oh, they like that. Oh, I better do that again. I haven't got any songs for it, but I'll still do it.
I think the other factor possibly might have just been he was still newly signed to RCA, and he'd signed a huge multi-million dollar... Sorry, to EMI. And he signed a huge multi-million dollar deal with them, and he delivered Let's Dance, which is more than they could possibly have hoped. And I think part of that, after the experience with RCA and Main Man and all the rest of it, was to kind of satisfy his new paymasters. I think he was a little bit conscious of that.
Yeah, he was making a lot of money for the first time, and
yeah.
and that was a big part of it, of course. But not a great way to have an album kind of driven,
for
want of a better phrase.
Yeah.
Like Let's Dance, but unlike most previous Bowie albums, Bowie played no instruments on the record. And in fact, he delegated almost all responsibility for the music played to his musicians, only occasionally offering critical input.
So Bowie brought in Derek Bramble and Hugh Padgham to produce the record, the former receiving the nod from Bowie due to some of the demos he'd recently produced for the English female singer Jackie Graham. As with Let's Dance, Bowie prepared for the album by recording some demos beforehand, this time showing up with 8 of the 9 songs that would appear on the album. This surprised collaborator Carlos Alomar, who's also the band leader on that record, who said it was the first time in the 11 years that I've been with the damn man that he'd brought in anything.
Right, okay. This is funny as well. Mm. If you think about how anodyne the album is, and the next component part, Iggy Pop spent a good deal of time in the studio with Bowie and the band while the album was being recorded, stating, I worked extensively on that album. There's a lot more work on there than is reflected in just a simple co-writing credit for 2 songs and some of the old stuff. And so Iggy Pop, I know not particularly at this point in time, but he'd made some of the most reckless records in the world ever.
Yeah.
And, you know, his whole personality was one based on danger and living on the edge. Mm. And here he is helping Bowie steer his way through his most sterile album.
Yeah.
Bizarre.
Yeah, it is a weird one, this. And I'll talk to Hugh Padgham about this, which we'll get to in a bit. When asked why Bowie included so much pop-written material on the album, Iggy could only guess, I think he just wanted the songs heard more, a sentiment Bowie would mirror when covering Pop's Bang Bang on his next album, Never Let Me Down. Some of the demo tracks weren't yet named, but they were numbered, called simply 1, 2, and 3.
And so, again, I mean... He'd not written much material, Bowie. That's why he's doing cover versions. You can gloss it up and dress it in any way that you like. But he'd not really done the work on it.
No, he hadn't.
And so, yeah, okay. One will turn into the Irreligious album track, Loving the Alien. See, I love that tune.
It's a great tune, that.
Yeah,
I think it's
brilliant. Bowie described Loving the Alien as a very personal bit of writing that he didn't feel would fit in with the rest of the album because it is such a dark song, a mist light affair. He said, Alien came about because of my feeling that so much history is wrong and is being rediscovered all the time, and that we base so much on the wrong knowledge that we've gleaned. Bowie cut the demo of the song in Montreux, Switzerland, with a guitarist and a drummer he'd drafted in from a local Swiss band.
Demo songs 2 and 3 were not finished for the album, much to Hugh Padgham's regret. He said, they're really just jams. David had some riffs on a tape in his head and the band would jam on them. We'd make a bit of a song out of it. But they're really quite raunchy songs. At one point, David asked me what my least favourite song out of the 11 or 12 that he had was, and I said Blue Jean. It's a strange one. I thought it was a bit lightweight. I would rather have had 2 in its place. I couldn't tell you why he didn't put them on the album, but I would have loved to have finished them.
Okay, 3 songs were covered of older Iggy Pop songs, Don't Look Down, Tonight and Neighbourhood Threat, the latter of which stands out as a track Bowie wished he'd not done, with him later calling it disastrous. That's the one I wished I'd never touched, or at least touched it differently. It went totally wrong. It sounded so tight and compromised, and it was such a gas doing it. It was the wrong band to do it with. Wonderful band, but he wasn't quite right for that song.
Tumble and Twirl, co-written with Iggy, recounts the pair's exploits while vacationing in the Indonesian islands Bali and Java after Bowie's previous tour had ended. Don't Look Down, which was one of Bowie's returns to a reggae-style track, like Yassassin off Lodger, perplexed Bowie. I tried it every which way, he said. I tried it jazz rock, I tried it as a march, and then I just hit on an old ska sounding beat and it picked up life, taking energy away from the musical side, reinforced the lyrics and gave them their own energy. I think working with Derek Bramble helped because he played some proper reggae bass lines.
Oh.
That's not a convincing statement.
I mean, do you know, I mean, I absolutely love ska. Reggae just doesn't really, I always find reggae a bit too relaxed for me, and it just doesn't really do it for me. But and the phrase cod reggae is like one of the biggest insults in the world, isn't it?
Probably the biggest on a musical level, isn't it?
But, possibly. So for tonight, the title track and the other reggae-style track on the album, Bowie eliminated Pop's original spoken word introduction, calling it an idiosyncratic thing of Pop's that seemed not part of my vocabulary. I guess removing the spoken introduction changed the whole sentiment around. It still has that same barren feeling, but it's out of that specific area that I'm not at home in. Pop approved of Bowie's changes. For the vocals to the song, Bowie and Tina Turner sang face to face, although Bowie went back and re-recorded the first verse after deciding to sing his part in a higher octave. And so he was doing a bit with Tina Turner, wasn't he?
I asked Hugh Padgham that, and we'll find his answer in a minute.
Okay, great.
Where were you going to go with that?
it's one of those stories.
Well, I'd heard that. Yeah, I'd heard that. I think from you, actually. Anyway, Dancing with the Big Boys, which Bowie also co-wrote with Pop, was written and recorded in 8 hours as they egged each other on. In what was described as an exhilarating rush, Bowie and Pop went into the studio with a few bottles of beer and virtually bellow out anything that came into their heads, said Padgham. And I just recorded it all. The song is about the little guy being crushed by oppressive corporate structures.
The lyrics were taken from a backlog of unused lyrics. The line, "the dot marks your location," was a reference to a lengthy, irritating stay, that's a quote, at a New York hotel. Bowie had been looking at the hotel room's fire escape map. "And your family is a football team" was a reference to the immigrant families working in New York. The whole family has to work together for survival. So this is a quote from Bowie.
Yeah, he says, "There's a particular sound I'm after that I haven't really got yet. I'll either crack it on the next album or retire from it. I think I got quite close to it on Dancing with the Big Boys. I got very musical over the last couple of years, trying to write musically and develop things the way people used to write in the 50s. I stayed away from experimentation." Never a good thing in Bowie's life. "Now I think I should be a bit more adventurous. And in Big Boys, Iggy and I broke away from all that for one track, and it came nearer to the sound I was looking for than anything else."
Yeah, I have to say as well, thinking about it, that the most money that Iggy Pop would have made in his life up to that point would have been, well, I mean, Raw Power was a big selling album for him.
Yeah.
With Bowie's, you know, patronage. But then, of course, The Idiot and Lust for Life, they will have made Iggy some money. And then the version of China Girl will have really raked it in for him.
Absolutely.
So you could see Iggy probably was, in all honesty, thinking, this is going to be a good return for me. This is going to be, you know, a financially sound movement.
Well, there's definitely a backstory to this album. You know, the idea of Bowie, you know, being the benefactor and trying to help his mate along, because he did. Because obviously, not long after this, Iggy gets a new deal. He didn't have a deal at this point, did he, I don't think, in the mid-80s. And then he has the deal and Blah, Blah, Blah comes out.
Produced by Bowie.
Yeah, and it's a big, big sound on it. It's very commercial and it's a huge success. So behind all, you can sort of see Bowie's reasoning.
Oh yeah, it's great. I mean, he did it for so many different people, didn't he? We know that. Three singles were released from the album: Tonight, Blue Jean, and Loving the Alien. Blue Jean in turn spawned several videos, including an elaborate 20-minute long collaboration with Julian Temple, which was described as more of a mini film than a video, and represented Bowie's interest in making actual movies. Despite some positive reviews of the album, other reviewers criticised it for lacking creativity. Padgham, who co-produced the album, also said it was less innovative than other Bowie albums.
An article for Melody Maker dismissed Tonight as rotten. AllMusic critic Stephen Thomas Erlewine called it one of the weakest albums Bowie ever recorded and wrote that none of the material equals the songs on Let's Dance, although he made an exception for Blue Jean. The new Rolling Stone album guide described Tonight as an expensive quickie padded with lame covers. What a dismissal.
Right, okay. Bowie would later distance himself from the album, acknowledging that it was not one of his stronger efforts. In 1989, when working with Tin Machine, he mused, "There's stuff on that album that I could really kick myself about. When I listened to those demos, it's how did it turn out like that? You should hear the Loving the Alien on demo. It's a wonderful demo, I promise you." Then he laughs. But on the album, it's not as wonderful.
No. Despite the general consensus on the album, Stylus magazine reviewed it in 2005 as part of its On Second Thought section and concluded that Tonight, although not a great album, is still a good one. "It's a much better album than you think it is," they said, or may have been led to believe. "Bowie's made some subpar records, but this isn't one of them." And frankly, even its failures aren't boring. Because, well, it's an 80s Bowie album from a decade in which he was wildly inconsistent, but also never dull.
Well, I think you know, history has proven that it is David Bowie's worst album.
I think so. Everybody kind of slates Never Let Me Down, but at least he was engaged and trying to play instruments and trying to do something different. But Tonight is a stinker.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. In 2016, Yo Zushi of The New Statesman also defended the album, writing, "No album that begins with a 7-minute masterpiece, Loving the Alien, fair point, and containing the rocking Blue Jean, fair point, should have received the drubbing it got. He also argued the TV special style cover of the Beach Boys' God Only Knows is as stirring in its cold, almost Brechtian way as Station to Station's Wild as a Wind. No, it's not.
No, it's not.
It's like watching Elvis in Las Vegas through a sheet of ice.
No, it's not.
No, it's not.
That is just wrong.
Yeah.
Music is subjective, but that is just wrong.
Yeah, he's wrong. What is he, Bob?
He is wrong.
Track listing, Loving the Alien.
Don't Look Down.
God Only Knows.
Why You Did It. Tonight with Tina Turner.
Neighbourhood Threat.
Tumble and Twirl.
I Keep Forgetting.
And Dancing with the Big Boys with Iggy.
I mean, when we do these albums, go through the albums one by one, we can kind of go off piste quite a lot.
Yes.
Because we've got an opinion on them. I haven't got much of an opinion on this, apart from the fact, and it is only based on a couple of listens, because I listened to it and didn't go back to it for a long, long time, and then listened to it again, I thought, yeah, I was right first time. So, you know, there will be people out there going, boo, Mark and Rob, boo, I love this record. And there will be people out there who do think that it's a worthy part of his catalogue, but we personally don't, and Bowie, by the look of it, didn't either. And so, you know, everybody's entitled to their own opinion, aren't they?
Yeah, I remember buying it at the time and thinking, especially after Let's Dance, which was so punchy and up, you know, and thinking, oh, what a disappointment. My heart sank. It's awful.
Yeah, so let's look at the Jazzin' for Blue Jean video. Jazzin' for Blue Jean is a 20-minute short film featuring David Bowie and directed by Julian Temple. It was created to promote Bowie's single Blue Jean in 1984 and released as a video single. Remember them?
Oh, yeah. The film won the 1985 Grammy Award for Best Video Short Form, later renamed Best Music Video, which proved to be Bowie's only competitive Grammy Award during his lifetime.
Wow.
The film depicts the adventures of the socially incompetent Vic, played by Bowie, as he tries to win the affections of a beautiful girl by claiming to personally know her favourite rock star, Screaming Lord Byron, also played, of course, by Bowie.
And a nod to Screaming Lord Sutch.
Yeah.
Of course. Rightfully disbelieving him, she challenges Vic to introduce her to him. They make a date for a Screaming Lord Byron show, where Vic attempts to sneak backstage to convince Mr. Screaming to come and say hello to him and the girl after the show. Screaming does come to Vic's table after the show and says hello to him and the girl, but the girl and Screaming Lord Byron have already met in Peru, obviously, and she leaves with the rock star instead of Vic. As he drive off, Bowie breaks the fourth wall and asks the director why the story changed from his concept.
It's a great video, actually, isn't it?
Playful, yeah. Yeah, and it is funny, isn't it? Because we know the cast here, Screaming Lord Byron, Vic, David Bowie.
Louise Scott plays The Dream.
Screaming's band, Paul Ridgely.
Yeah, Richard Fairbrass.
And Daryl Humphries. So Richard Fairbrass of Right Said Fred.
Yeah.
And it was one of them when people said, oh, that's him out of Right Said Fred in Bowie's video. You go, no. And then you look at it, and of course it is. He's got hair in it, though.
Yeah,
I think,
he is. And of course, Bowie's stand-in was a guy called Ian Ellis.
Right, okay. All right, then. I think we're done, aren't we?
I think we're done, certainly.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
The A to Z of David Bowie, with Mark Riley and Rob Hughes.
So that's what we think of tonight, isn't it, Bob? And we've laid our cards on the table. But you did interview Hugh Padgham in the August of 2018. And so the first question that you asked, I believe you suggested to Bowie using Morin Heights in Canada for the recording of Tonight.
And he said, I'm not sure, but it was probably me because I'd been there a year or 18 months before with the police. I feel slightly guilty if it was me because towards the end of the record, Bowie was getting really bored of being in the middle of nowhere. On the other hand, he liked to record fairly quickly. And if anything, this record was probably quite slow compared to what he was used to. As Bowie was saying, that 5 weeks is a long time in a Bowie calendar. I then said to him, he went into the studio to make Tonight only a few months after the end of the Serious Moonlight tour, which had gone on for a long, long time. Did he get the impression that the record company were trying to rush Bowie into the studio for a follow-up to Let's Dance?
His answer, yes, I think so. But the thing is, I wasn't really involved in the whole why and wherefore of it all. I was originally contracted by my friend Bob Clearmountain, who was the engineer on Let's Dance. He was originally asked by Davey to do it, but he couldn't. No one's going to turn down working with Bowie. I would have probably taken the gig if I'd been asked to be the T-boy. It was only later on, after Derek Bramble had gone, that I thought, oh my God, this is what I've been this is what I've been left with.
Well, the thing is, so Bowie brings in Derek Bramble initially, didn't he? And it just didn't work out. They didn't get on. We should probably find out some reasons in a minute.
What is Derek Bramble's history? I don't really know his
Well, he was just a new guy on the block. You know, he'd produced Jackie Graham. I think he might have been involved in Heatwave at one point. So he was coming from that sort of British soul and R&B end.
Right.
And he didn't have a lot of experience. But Bowie, I think it's, you know, that thing that Bowie had about working with, like, you know, up-and-coming producers, you know, edgy people. And he thought this was one of them, and it didn't turn out to be the case. So Hugh Padgham, apart from being the engineer to begin with, ended up being promoted to producer just to finish it off.
Right, with you.
All right, so he says here, when I rocked up at the gig, nobody actually said, there's only two songs on the album that David's written on his own, Loving the Alien and Blue Jean. All the others were from Iggy's album, plus the Beach Boys cover and the Lieber and Stoller cover. I think Dancing with the Big Boys was pretty well written in the studio, I think. Then the others were from Iggy's album Lust for Life, so it's definitely a case of I'll scratch your back if you scratch mine kind of vibe going on. And then I said to him, I believe that Iggy and Bowie had more songs together. This is what we were talking about before, wasn't it? Had more songs together, and in your opinion, they were better than the ones that finally made it onto the album.
Well, these two spare songs never got finished. And he says that Nigel Reeve has since found the tape. So Nigel's a mate of ours, and he's got the keys to the Bowie cupboard. Yes. Hello, Nigel. You're great. What I do remember is that they were rock orientated, and I thought that they might really sort of be a balance for the album. When I got asked to finish the album off and co-produce, I think at that point, Davey was like, I just want to get this bloody thing done. I'm stuck out here in the middle of nowhere, and I've spent too long doing it as far as I'm concerned, and I just want to get on and enjoy being a pop star for once. Fair enough, David.
He went on to say, I got on like a house on fire with David. He was an absolute gentleman to me. We met up a few years later when I did something with him on Tin Machine. Obviously, we all know stories of his ruthlessness in the way he treated musicians and stuff. But as far as I'm concerned, he was always a total gentleman with me and a consummate professional in terms of the fact I don't think I've ever worked with a better singer.
He continued, going back to the album, I wasn't crazy about the faux reggae vibe on Tonight. I love Tina Turner, but the whole vibe she was in at the time was quite poppy. And I thought Blue Jean was a bit lightweight as well. I never thought that the album would eventually be called Tonight, which to me was one of the least cool Bowie songs, so I was keen to do two extra tracks, which felt more like a balancing out. Do you know, I mean, Tonight is a great song.
Yeah, but not here.
But not here, yeah, okay. So he's wrong about the song, but right about the version.
Yeah, yeah.
So your question, this thing about enjoying being a pop star, did you get the impression that it was something he craved all along?
I think he was, although maybe not so much commercially, said Hugh. We used to chat sometimes, and when Coco Schwab was around, or Bowie's PA, and I think he was enjoying having all the attention of being a pop star and being straight, because he went through a pretty druggy period in the late 70s when he said he couldn't really remember much of it at all. So I think maybe the fact he was straighter, he was certainly enjoying that. And this was a few years before he met Iman. And I did ask him, now this is to answer your question before, Mark, were Bowie and Tina Turner an item at the time? I didn't say, were they doing it? I just
doing a bit.
an item.
Well, you obviously not got my journalistic bent, mate. I don't think so, he said, because I remember that David had a girlfriend who used to come up occasionally from New York. And this girl would only come over with a friend, so David's got me to try and entertain this girl's friend. And I was about to get married, so I'd say, no, I can't. A friend did come up, but we platonically entertained her.
That was so delicate.
That sounds like a right old disclaimer to me. And I am sure absolutely truthful.
Right, okay.
So, and then you asked, the story goes that Derek Bramble didn't work out because he was trying to get Bowie to do quite a few vocal takes of everything, whereas Bowie, by nature, always did one or two takes and then moved on.
Yeah, said Hugh, that was definitely part of the friction, I think. In a way, I think everybody there was really experienced, either in the studio or in terms of making records, and Derek was maybe a little out of his depth, perhaps wanted to prove he was meant to be the boss, and it didn't really work.
My thing with David and the singing is that he nails it on the first or second go, without a doubt, every time. He was pitch perfect and everything. He was absolutely the best singer I've ever worked with. Not to knock other people, but he was so fast and professional. So I think when he was asked to sing another take, in my head he's going, why? I'm thinking the same thing, and David and I exchanged glances once or twice, and those glances then turned into a conversation.
So as part of this piece, it was for Uncut Magazine, actually, coincided with the release of the big box set, Loving the Alien. I was chatting to Carlos Alomar about the same thing, well, about the whole sort of 80s career, but we got onto tonight, inevitably, and I did say to him, did you think David had a clear idea of the record he wanted to make with tonight? So this is his answer kind of alludes to what I was saying before about, you know, just not being prepared, you know, the record company maybe putting a bit of pressure on.
Right.
And Carla said, no, not at all. So we were on this Serious Moonlight tour and we get called by the record company who say, the record's doing great, sales are amazing, we need another album right away. I mean, come on, why would you bother one of your main artists on who you'd invested all this money just so we can come off the road and slap something together for your people? This is what really bummed David out. He hated that.
And with all due respect to David, continued Carlos Alomar, this is common practice. Record companies do it all the time, and yet you would think, with the kind of support you wanted, you weren't getting it. So this issue of support was constantly on his mind. Here you are, supporting me on this amazing tour, but now you want me to go and do something completely crazy, which is do an album. For me, tonight was okay, in a so-so voice. When we get to the studio, we start throwing things together and seeing what it is we can do.
He continued, in this particular case, the biggest thing for him was the fact that he had Tina Turner coming in to do this. Now, this is really important. As iconic as David is, he wanted this to be an amazing experience for her. I'm a Buddhist and she's a Buddhist. We belong to the same organisation. So he's like, Carlos and Robin, you've got to join us for dinner. We talked about Zen Buddhism and Tao and Shakyamuni Buddha.
Okay, so he says, I could feel his personal discomfort at being in a room with someone as iconic as Tina Turner. As a kid, he idolised this woman, so he can well understand that he wanted all things covered. Let there be no stone unturned to make this woman feel at home. And we had a wonderful time. Then you asked him, what about the idea to do the Beach Boys cover?
I had to ask him that.
Of course you did.
Always wondered why. He says, I don't know why we did, God only knows. We tried our best with everything, but it's a cover, and I don't mess with arrangements of covers. It was like Across the Universe on Young Americans when it came to do that and other songs he gave me, although he did let me do a crazy arrangement for Alabama Song, which is the old Kurt Vile tune, of course, wasn't it? Carlos Alomar was trying to make the best of a bad batch. He was talking up tonight in a way that I don't think he had done before, and I'm guessing that was just probably because the box set was coming out and it was, you know, he just wanted to do his best for that.
You would not be wheeled out to promote a new album, a new version of an album, which is obviously going to be a money spinner, by saying it's crap.
No.
The A to Z of David Bowie with Mark Riley and Rob Hughes.
T is for Toy the Album.
Now, Toy is an unreleased album by David Bowie, recorded for release in 2001 and leaked onto the internet in 2011.
It wasn't me, Bob, before you say anything.
Are you sure?
Okay, cards on the table. I did have a copy of Toy for a long time, and I really liked it, actually. It wasn't a great, great record, but, you know, for Bowie, just like dipping his toes back in and everything, and some really interesting stuff there. And obviously some of it did tip up on Heathen as well. Mm. And then other bits and bats came out at various points. But I did like it. And right. But it was a really weird thing having it and thinking, hey, I've got this David Bowie album that I can't tell anybody about and nobody knows I've got. And it was just one of those things, you know.
Okay, I don't know it. I'll be honest. Obviously, I know the songs because
that surfaced.
Yeah, of course. But, you know, although Bowie had begun recording the album intending to feature new versions of some of his earliest pieces as well as three new tunes, its sessions led him to Heathen in 2002, and it was never released officially. Originally, Bowie had recorded the album Toy for release in 2001 or 2002.
It was meant to feature some new songs and remakes of some of his lesser-known songs from the 60s. Toy remains officially unreleased. In 2001, on his own website, Bowie participated on a virtual chat with fans, and when one of them asked about the release of Toy, he replied,
I'm finding EMI Virgin seem to have a lot of scheduling conflicts this year, which has put an awful lot on the back burner. Toy is finished and ready to go, and I'll make an announcement as soon as I get a very real date. In the meantime, I've already started writing and recording for another album, untitled at the moment. So far, I have to say it's back to experimental. But knowing me, it doesn't mean that's how it'll turn out. I shall be writing and recording throughout the summer, but dadifying it is really my priority at the moment.
Daddyfying?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I don't know. Just looking after it.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. Let's look at the alternative versions. Liza Jane, Bowie's debut single, released under the name of Davy Jones and the King Bees.
You've got Habit of Leaving was the third single, credited to Davy Jones, but recorded with his then band Lower Third.
The original version of Silly Boy Blue appeared on Bowie's eponymous debut album, and several other versions of these songs were released during Bowie's early career, including I Dig Everything, Baby Loves That Way, as collected on Early On, and then In the Heat of the Morning and The London Boys, as collected on the DRAM anthology.
A version of Conversation Piece was recorded and released in 1970. Uncle Floyd, retitled Slip Away and Afraid, were later released on Heathen. Baby Loves That Way, Shadow Man and You Got a Habit of Leaving were released as B-sides to Heathen singles, and Conversation Piece was included on the limited edition bonus disc of Heathen in 2002. The bonus tracks on the limited edition Heathen disc are Sunday, Moby Remix, A Better Future, remixed by Air, Conversation Piece and Panic in Detroit, which is an outtake from 1979.
Yeah, the songs Let Me Sleep Beside You, Your Turn to Drive and Shadow Man are included on the 3CD deluxe edition of Bowie's 2014 compilation album Nothing Has Changed, which also includes the original versions of In the Heat of the Morning, Silly Boy Blue and You Got a Habit of Leaving and Liza Jane. Okay, so I don't think we really need to go through the track list and all that gooey stuff.
No, I think we've covered that, haven't we?
Yeah, the musicians, the personnel on it. So you've got Davey Bowie, vocals, keyboard, stylophone, mandolin.
Earl Slick on guitar.
Gaylan Dorsey, bass.
Mark Platy, bass, guitars.
Sterling Campbell, drums.
Lisa Germano on violin.
Holly Palmer, backing vocals.
M. Griner, backing vocals.
Jerry Leonard, guitars.
Mike Garson on piano.
And Tony Visconti, string arrangements. Lisa Germano, she was a 4AD recording artist.
She was, yes.
Yeah, was it called Puppet? The single, perhaps. Oh. And she came and did a session for Mark Radcliffe and I. Oh. And I'll tell you something a bit later on. Nothing prurient or anything.
Really?
But yeah. Anyway. It was one of those. It was very apparent as time was going on that it wasn't going to come out.
Yes.
And there was somebody at the record company who just didn't think it was up to the job. Which is kind of funny if you think about the... it's good, really. Hmm. Because if you look back only a couple of minutes to when we were doing tonight, it was a complete opposite. So the record company wanted him to put something out regardless of what it was, whereas there was some actual quality control, for better or worse, taking part with Toy. And so there it was a legendary lost album until somebody got it. I think it might have been somebody in Australia who ended up leaking it. And do you know what? I mean, these things are almost impossible to keep a lid on, aren't they? If somebody's got it somewhere out there, it will normally leak out. It's a little bit like the 1980 Floor Show.
Yes.
You know, the video of it, eventually. There's somebody out there who's got it. And there was even, for the 1980 Floor Show, just to give an example, there was even one version of the DVD which came out, obviously a bootleg, because Bowie never wanted it out, but with lots of different camera angles and time codes on it. And so, if somebody's got it somewhere, it will eventually end up in my drawer.
Of course. I was going to say, is your copy of Toy in this room?
It was only, I mean, it was a digital, so...
Didn't have a physical.
It never existed. It was never pressed up or anything, as far as I'm aware. I made my own little cover for it, and it was a good cover, actually. I mean, Davey could have had it if it had got that far, but it didn't.
If only he'd known.
So that's it for this episode of the A to Z of David Bowie. But once again, before you go...
If you'd like to support us along the way and be a member of an exclusive Bowie club, you can, and here's how.
There's an exclusive Bowie members club called Cheap Things, and for just $5 a month, you can be part of it.
Why? So now you're thinking $5 isn't much, but what exactly will I get for my hard-earned cash?
Well, in short, you'll get lots of great new exclusive material delivered to your door.
Well, computer, actually, Mark.
Via a system called Patreon.
That's right, Mark. Patreon is a payment system that allows you to contribute your monthly subscription and offers you a portal to access the exclusive material.
Material such as...
interviews with Bowie's cohorts and friends.
There'll be regular filmed Bowie quizzes.
Bowie guitar tutorials.
Unreleased archive written material.
Competitions.
And perhaps most impressively, short films featuring the Cheap Things team.
Ah, that'll be me, Mark, Howard Knock and Jason Reed.
Visiting various Bowie places of interest.
And much more besides.
All this for just $5 a month.
So if you can't resist, simply go to patreon.com, that's patreon.com/cheapthings, or one word, and join up.
There's also a website,
BowieCheapThings.com.
Book early.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time.
That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.